What is going on, everybody? My name is Corey Teleba of No Ceilings, and I am reporting live from the Big East Tournament at Madison Square Garden. And before we get started on an exciting group of games today, where I am going to see Stephen Castle and Donovan Klingon, I'm going to see Desmond Claude, I am going to see Oso Iguodaro, I'm just going to see a ton of the prospects that are coming out of the Big East, Trey Alexander, Baylor Shireman, the whole squad. But before we get started with that, while I wait, I decided that I was going to record a NBA draft Q&A. So I went to Twitter and our Discord, and I decided to ask people, you got questions, I got answers. If you got questions, throw them in the comments and I will answer them to the best of my ability live as well. So to start out, we have Matt T on Twitter. He says, since returning from injury, Isaiah Collier has been better. Do you think Collier is back in to the lotto discussion? I absolutely do think that he is in the lotto discussion. There's a debate on whether or not he ever left it for NBA teams. I think there was a ton of reason to be skeptical. I was at the top of the list of people who were skeptical about Isaiah Collier because he was really underperforming for all of the burst and flash and finishing at the rim, the playmaking. There was a lot of issues with his decision making. Things got really wonky with the jumper. I think that Isaiah Collier put himself in a position where they even had to ask that question. But since he's come back, since he's returned, he has been fantastic. He's honed in on his decision making a little bit, and he's looked like the kind of guy that is a great bet in the lottery because he's going to be a downhill guard that can get to the paint and make plays for other people. And whether that ultimately taps him out as the kind of guard that is going to be better coming off your bench, or whether that means he's the type of guard that's ultimately going to turn into like an Aaron Fox kind of guy, he's done enough lately to at least get himself back into that conversation. TFM on Twitter says, if the Bulls get the 12th pick, who would they rather choose? Tristan Silva, Alex Caravan, Donovan Klingon, who he doubts would be there if UConn makes a great run in March. Dalton Connect, he'd love Stephen Castle, but I don't think he'll be there. If Stephen Castle is there, I think that would be tremendous. I would absolutely love that. Klingon is another guy that I think would give the Bulls something that they lack, is, you know, a real rim protector. Vucevic is great, but I think that when you are, a team that is in the position where they are, where they're towing the line between contending and, you know, trying to get these young pieces like Patrick Williams and Kobe White, and they kind of want to stay competitive even though they're in the middle, Donovan Klingon is the kind of guy, even with his injury history, that you have to take a shot on if he's available there. Will he be available there? That all depends on the medicals. If the medicals are bad, he may be there. If the medicals are better, then there's a chance that he goes much earlier than that because he's been super, super productive in the games that he's played this year, he's done a better job lately, but even if he hasn't played the amount of minutes as a guy like Zach Edey. Now, Dalton Connect is a guy that, if you're the Chicago Bulls, that would be an absolute home run if you could get him in that part of the lottery, any team really. But for the Bulls, I think he'd be tremendous because they're a team that's in the bottom 10 of the NBA in shooting and scoring. He is an absolute bucket. He's a sniper. He can do it off the bounce. He can do it off the catch. He can do it off movement. He's a guy that would really fit well on that team. Obviously, there are defensive question marks, but the Bulls have been a pretty solid defensive team over the last couple of years, even if you wouldn't necessarily believe that given their roster construction. Tristan DeSilva and Caravan, very early for me, but another wild card name I like for the Bulls, and we actually just mocked him there on the No Ceilings mock draft that we released on Wednesday that you can check out at NoCeilingsNBA.com. I like Colin Murray-Boyles. I think he is a big, big, big-time riser, a guy who I think is, he's killing the advanced stat models and has just looked tremendous game after game after game. Great feel, awesome defender, can stick on the perimeter and got the length and to be a little bit of a rim deterrent too. So I love Colin Murray-Boyles as well. All right, Doran Wheel from the YouTube comment says, you're great, great fan of yours. A couple of questions. Is Dalton Connect a top 10 guy? I believe that he is personally. Is Reed Sheppard top 5? And where do you rank Kyle Filipowski? Filipowski, I think, is really good. I think he is in that Probably 8 to 12 or 13 range. I think he's had a tremendous season. The shot has got in more this year, and it looks good. It looked good last year, even when he was missing. Really tough, really physical. He's moved better defensively, both on the perimeter and as a rim protector, so that's been great. Reed Sheppard, I think he's top five. The production that he's putting up as a freshman is honestly some of the best that you're going to find over the last 15 years from any freshman in college basketball. Shooting over 50% from three. We're in conference tournaments right now. It is the middle of March. He's still over 50%, and that's on good volume. I think the last player or prospect to do that, shoot 50% from three, having played a substantial amount of games, you know, not like Aaron Naismith where he got injured and he only played a few games. I think it was like Mitch Richmond or Glenn. It was one of those two guys. So what he's doing is crazy. I personally think he has more on-ball juice. I think there's a lot of Mark Price in his game. We're starting to see some of the more playmaking, you know, the high level playmaking flashes. He had an insane like baseline wraparound pass the other day. He had a really nice live dribble left-handed whip to the opposite wing a couple of games ago as well. So I think Reed has more juice on the ball than he's being given credit for. I think he's super bursty, an underrated first step that allows him to get into the paint. He could pull up in the mid-range. He could decelerate. I'm a big fan of Reed. So I would take him with a top five pick. I would have absolutely no issues with that at all. In the No Ceilings Discord, which you can join if you subscribe to No Ceilings Plus at NoCeilingsNBA.com, we got our guy, Filipowski Season, who asked, are there players that you think should stay another year but will come out anyway because of the perceived weakness of the class? And do you think that's a good idea? Or who wouldn't it be a good idea for if it's not a uniform answer? I do think that there are players who should stay another year but will come out, whether it is because the perceived weakness of the class or whether because they have a group of people telling them that they should come out. And that's what they're supposed to do because they were high-level prospects. Two guys that come to mind immediately that I think should stay in but will probably test the waters at minimum are DJ Wagner and Bub Carrington. I think Wagner... you know, right now he just doesn't have a lot of NBA skills that he could bank on. Like, shot creation's great, but are you a better shot creator than Damian Lillard? Are you a better shot creator than Trae Young? These are the type of things for a guy like that who is so usage heavy that he has to ask himself. I think he's been a better playmaker this year than I would have expected coming in. But the fact that he is a limited shooter, I think he's a limited finisher at this point. I think that really hampers him because unlike Reed, unlike Rob, he can't kind of toggle between on-ball, off-ball. And I think that at the next level, it just there's so many high-level guards that for DJ Wagner, he needs more development. And I think getting those reps in college would be more beneficial than being sent down to the G League. I think, you know, learning how to play a more nuanced game and getting a chance to earn those reps, I think that would be beneficial for him. And for Bub, I think for him, I think it's a big deal that he just needs to develop physically. Like, we could talk about he has great plus height all we want, but, you know, for Bub Carrington, he's the type of guy who he's just so slim, and the pull-up stuff is really cool. I think he's a good passer, but NBA physicality is a real thing that prospects have to consider, and Bub Carrington is just not at the point where I think that he could hold up physically. And we see that a lot where he struggles to even get to the rim and he has to rely on the pull-up game. So Bub is a guy that I think he'll be intriguing just because he does have that pull-up ability, and that pull-up ability is real. I mean, being able to pull up in the mid-range, being able to pull up and hit shots off the dribble from three, that is stuff that is our real deal NBA skill. So I think that he's the kind of guy that should stay, but ultimately I think could be enticed to come out. But I think DJ's probably got a better shot of coming out than Bub does. And then the other guy, Justin Edwards, is a guy who should probably go back. He's been way better lately. His shot has been pretty good in 2024. Like, he's over 40% in 2024 from three. But he's a guy that just needs more reps. He needs to be somebody who is able to figure out how to contribute when things are not operating through him. And he hasn't really been a guy that you would want to let things operate through. But he needs to hit the boards harder. He needs to make a bigger impact on the defensive side of the ball. He needs to just do things that separate himself from other prospects in the draft. He's 6'8", he's huge, and I think, you know, his shot projects, so he's going to get multiple shots. So if he does come out, I could see him getting a first round promise, and I could see him coming out and a team taking a bet on the pedigree of that. And for him, I think he has a much more reasonable reason for coming out than the guys that I listed previously. All right, let's head back to Twitter. Finley Oliver asks, what is Stephen Castle if he doesn't shoot? And that's a good question. And that's a question that a lot of people have that work in the league. It's a question a lot of people have and, you know, media scouts have and draft Twitter thinks about. And if he doesn't shoot, I think that he could be similar to Marcus Smart. I think he's been unbelievable defensively this year. Like, so good. I mean, he bodies up. He can really move. He can flip his hips. He's got length. He can test shots. He can get up and get vertical at the rim. I think that he's the kind of guy that absolutely is going to be a contributor, even if he is more Marcus Smart. Now, I know Marcus Smart is okay with shooting the ball. I think Stephen Castle ultimately will get there. I think his shot is a little palmy, and there's certainly some mechanical stuff, but it's been better lately, and for him, it's going to be a confidence thing. Another guy that he kind of reminds me of a little bit, and I'm going to say this name, so, you know, don't, you know, overreact, some very early Chicago Bulls Jimmy Butler. You know, Jimmy was not always Jimmy G Bucket. Jimmy Butler was a guy who his career started slowly. He had to earn his way onto the court. You know, he was the last pick in the first round. Now, Jimmy's probably a little bit taller, but I think that the way that they play, the way that they dissect the defense in the half court, the way that I think that Castle has been an excellent cutter. You know, he has a really good understanding of when he should be getting into a space in a seam and taking advantage of that and when he should be spacing. So early Jimmy Butler is another guy that I think Castle can aspire to play like. And the fact that he has ball skills, the fact that he can pass, I think even as a baseline, if the shot never comes around, I think he'll find ways to be able to contribute because he has other high-level skills. If the shot does come around, I think he could be one of the best players in the entire draft. And if he looks like a guy, more so like he looked like in high school than the guy that he, you know, has had to be this year at UConn, where he's playing on a team that are probably the favorites to win the national title, and he has to, you know, step in as a freshman and play a team basketball, which I think is going to be good for his development. I think the way he's handled that this year and how good he's been coming back from that injury, I think that, you know, he projects to be a really, really good NBA player. Who are some prospects in the draft that you believe have a wide draft range? That's from Elias Eldridge. Some guys that I think have a crazy draft range. I think Reed Sheppard probably has a pretty interesting draft range just from, the lottery. Could he be top three? Like, we mocked him, the Ringer mocked him high, or do teams get scared off by his size and ultimately push him back? I think his range is certainly interesting. I think that a guy like Donovan Klingon, his range is interesting for reasons that I mentioned earlier, where if his medicals don't clear and check out, he's a guy that could definitely flip in the draft some. Ron Holland is another interesting guy in that upper tier where maybe there's a team who buys into, you know, the fact that he was productive from a pure numbers standpoint in the G League Ignite this year. But now, you know, he also was really raw. He turned the ball over a lot. He can't shoot. So if a team buys into that, he can go as high as one probably. If teams don't buy into it, I think he could flip to the back end of the lottery, and even maybe not in this draft, but potentially out of it. Kyshawn George from Miami is a guy that 6'8" with ball skills. You know, he's a guy that like a lot of teams are interested in. A lot of people are interested in the skill set that he brings because he's 6'8". He's 40% from three, like smooth, like moves around like Brandon Ingram a little bit. So he's getting a lot of like lotto buzz, but you know, he also wasn't super productive for a pretty underwhelming and not fun to watch Miami team. So he could be a second rounder if he comes out, you know, like his draft range is wild. Manny Seller in the comments says Dylan Jones' draft range seems unpredictable, and I think that's true. Dylan is a guy who has so many skills and put up 20-10-5 in his conference this year. Really hard worker, great basketball mind. You can watch the film session we did with him last year at the No Ceilings YouTube. But yeah, his draft range can certainly be unpredictable because he's also unorthodox, and he hasn't proven that he could shoot in the high upper 30s from a percentage standpoint. You know, he's ground bound. You know, teams are going to want to know, like, if he, what position is he? What does he look like without the ball in his hand? So there are going to be teams that are certainly skeptical, but there could be teams that buy into it. So I think that's a really great call as well. Let's see if there's anybody else. Tijan Salon, another high risk, high reward, boom or bust type of prospect. I mean, you know, he got really hot from behind the line for like a 10-game stretch, and he started kind of generating like potential top five buzz because he's huge. Like, I think he's listed at 6'9", but he looks like he's bigger than that. He looks like he was towering over Richaché in their matchup. So he's certainly a guy that I think could potentially be, you know, a team that has multiple picks early in the draft. You could be like, you know what, with the second pick, we're going to take him because we think that the risk is worth the reward, the juice is worth the squeeze. But teams could also be scared off because he's super raw. You know, like, his decision making isn't great. He doesn't have like the best feel. He's more of a play finisher, but there are times where he looks like Michael Porter Jr. And if that's the case, then, like, you know, he's the guy that I could certainly see a team swinging on, or he's the guy that I could see teams being ultimately a little bit scared off on. So, yeah, I think he's another good one. Okay, let's see. Why isn't Brian Taylor asks, why isn't Jameer Watkins getting first round hype? That's a good question, because Jameer Watkins has been awesome. I really liked him as a breakout candidate coming into the year, and he's been Florida State's best prospect, in my opinion. He's got good size, although, I don't know, he looks smaller on screen to me than his listed height, because I think he's 6'7". But he's had some really explosive games. You know, he's got multiple skills. He can pass a little bit. He's got tools to bend. It's going to come down to how consistent that shot is. You know, that's just straight. And that's the answer for a lot of these prospects, that it'll come down to, like, can they be consistent shooters? Because, you know, he's not going to project to be a star at the next level. So if you're taking that kind of wing, which, you know, if you're going to take a bet on somebody in the latter half of the first round or in early in the second, like, a wing with his ball skills are certainly interesting. And I think that he's a guy that could rise because he's super athletic and he has the size and he's got all those multiple. So in the pre-draft process, he's a guy that could potentially see a little bit of a rise. He's also a little older, which is why I think, you know, people maybe are a little more scared, but I think that's silly.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
All right. At NerdRunner asks, how important do you consider production for prospects, and how do you go about comparing production in different leagues, college versus the NBL, for example? Seeing a lot of draft boards for which BPM seem to be the primary data point, how do you feel about that? I think that producing in your pre-draft year is super important. I think that, you know, like, usually guys who are good players, man, like, a lot of times that will translate if you're an NBA player. If you look at the guys that get drafted, a lot of them were good before they got to the league. They showed those skills. So I do think there is something to the fact that if you are producing in college, it will help transfer for the league. As far as the, you know, people, and I think this has been a recent trend on that, you know, you've seen on Twitter, where people are really, really, really digging into BPM as a metric to build out their boards and are ignoring the other stuff that goes into scouting. They're ignoring a lot of what the film tells you. You know, there are just variables where numbers cannot get you to, you know, from point A to point B by themselves. And the film always do that either. So if you are completely building out your board using BPM as a metric, you know, yeah, you're going to be able to hit on certain players because of that, but you're also going to miss on guys. So you have to watch the game and see the context and understand the reason for why a player's BPM might not be great. You know, now I did a piece earlier this year for NoCeilingsNBA.com on, you know, a lot of the small guards and the guards that came before them that are in the NBA that have been drafted over the last 5 years. What did their statistical profile look like in their pre-draft season? And there is something to using BPM to find a baseline level of production. So it seems like most of the prospects are over a six. Some prospects that could survive at five, but below five, you are typically, you know, just not productive enough to, you know, make it in the league. There's one outlier in Tyrese Maxey, who was like 4.5 or something like that. So that was our baseline level using BPM. But obviously, if you just use BPM to build out your board, you would have Tyrese Maxey, you know, probably even further down the list of where he ended up being drafted. You would miss. And getting that value, you know, if you watch the film, right, you knew that he had so much potential, and that's why he was a first rounder, but people still overthought it. And you look at that Kentucky team. He was sharing a backcourt with Ashton Hagens and Emmanuel Quickley. He didn't get to, you know, spend time on the ball at the level that he should have because they ran so much out of Ashton Hagens. That's why at No Ceilings, we now have the Ashton Hagens Award for the, you know, guard that is kind of hampering a prospect draft stock a little bit. And shout out to Ashton Hagens, who, you know, made it to the in the league this year with the Blazers. So shout out to him. But Tyrese Maxey, you'd have missed it if you'd only used BPM as a metric to grade him, because you could not underestimate his burst. His shot was inconsistent, but he was taking tough ones. He was taking long ones. The one he hit in the garden early in his freshman season was insane, right? It looked good. The form's repeatable. It's consistent. But the release point was a little low. And, you know, he just didn't knock down shots at the level that you would have wanted him to. But he was a really good finisher in the half court. And obviously the speed, he had the frame, he had the length, he had all the tools. So if you're using BPM as your only metric, you're doing it wrong. Just straight up. Like, it's lazy analysis. You might think that it's, you know, you're outsmarting everybody, but it's straight up lazy if that is the only thing that you're taking into account. If you're using it as a data point for your evaluation, it's very useful. But you have to do the work outside of just looking at that specific number. And then how do you compare production in different leagues, college versus NBL, for example? It's hard, man. It's really hard. Like, Alex Saar playing 20 minutes a game, right? Like, in the NBL, he might be the number one pick versus, you know, a big man who's playing 30 per game and really producing. How do you measure that? I think that what you have to do is you have to gauge them for how they're performing versus their competition. You know, in the NBL, for the NBL is a little bit easier because now, with, you know, I think this year in particular, they did a really good job of getting, you know, a lot of prospects that are on the NBA radar. So there is some level of comparison for how ready guys are, what their production means, right? AJ Johnson barely getting rotation minutes for the Hawks versus, you know, Bobby Klintman and Alex Saar getting a ton of minutes, Alex Toohey looking pretty good. But it's hard because it's not a one-for-one. You know, you add in the G League Ignite, that style, sometimes it feels like you're watching OTE games just with NBA-level guys. So you definitely – I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that, and I think that it goes prospect by prospect, and you just have to look at their skills and figure out if they're going to be able to translate that to an NBA context, or if, you know, like what they're doing, you know, if they can't produce there, does that mean that it's over for them? Like, I don't think so. I still believe in AJ Johnson because I do believe in his tools. He's just really raw. It's just really hard to do. And I think that, you know, RJ Hampton didn't work out in the NBL, but LaMelo Ball did. So at the end of the day, it's going to come down to talent. A dirty dancer, and this will be the last question before I get out of here, because we got some teams working out on the court, and I got to get those videos to post on social for you guys. Dirty Dancer asks, do you believe Boyles will shoot it, or are you just betting on his defense? I'm betting on more than his defense. I think that, and I saw people throwing around the word raw with him online the other day, and I couldn't disagree more. Just because his jump shot isn't developed doesn't mean he's raw. I actually think he has excellent feel. And the fact that he's producing to the level that he is without a jump shot is completely awesome. I think he's an excellent passer. And I think that he's going to be a guy who's going to kill in the short roll. I think that, you know, he's really good around the rim. And I think that his free throw percentage has been better right now. I watched him in high school, and I really liked his game a lot. And I think that he shot it more in high school than he is now, because, you know, I think him coming back, missing a lot of the beginning of the season, and now coming back, I think he's sticking with what he is comfortable with. But I think that his shot is far from broken. It's not great by any stretch. He's going to have to put real work into it. But he showed me enough in high school, and I think he's got good touch elsewhere, that I think that he will get his shot to an adequate enough level. Ultimately, when I watch him, I see a guy that looks a lot like an early Julius Randle. Now, Julius Randle developed his game in ways that, you know, I think were fairly unpredictable and really become a threat as a shooter from distance. But I think Murray Boyles has some of that to his game, not complete one-for-one. I've seen people throw around. There's a little bit of Bam. There's a little bit of Draymond. Like, obviously, these are top-tier names. And to compare, you know, a prospect to those guys is usually setting them up for failure. But I do think that there are really high-end outcomes for Colin Murray Boyles. And he's so young and so good already. I just don't think he's going to stop getting better. So I'm a big believer. All right. Thank you, everybody, for watching the NBA Draft Q&A. I got a really exciting day of hoops ahead. It is going to be a long day for me. I'm going to need a lot of coffee. But thank you, everybody, for rocking with me. Make sure that if you're watching this live on YouTube, you subscribe to the channel. The button is down here somewhere. Hit the like button. Share it. If you're listening on our podcast feed, make sure that you subscribe, share, rate, and review. And until next time, I'm out. Appreciate you rocking with me. Peace.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.